Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
And welcome into the Wednesday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Wednesday morning. Fellas, how we doing? Joe, what's going on?
Not a lot. Just getting closer to the big weekend and, you know, just ready for it all, man.
Yeah, man. This will be our last show of the week. We'll be back on Monday after Christmas, but got a lot of football to talk about today. Really excited about it. A lot of Packers, Titans, a little bit of Tennessee football, some coaching news in the SEC as well. We got a lot to get to today. First off, Elijah, after last night, the NBA coming back, are you ready to declare either the Brooklyn Nets or the LA Clippers champions already?
Not quite. Okay. However, I will declare Kevin Durant back.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
He is pretty good at basketball, and I'd say he has recovered from that Achilles pretty well.
Yes.
You know, last night was a little disappointing from about three teams. Even though the Clippers won last night, I still thought they kind of sucked. And the Warriors definitely sucked, and the Lakers definitely sucked for like three quarters. And it was basically what is a glorified preseason game four for all teams involved. But it was nice to have it back. I will say that. It is nice to be playing fantasy basketball and to feel like the NBA season is actually back. So the only thing I will declare back is Kevin Durant.
I feel like the Lakers are probably going to suck for about a month, month and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll, all right, it's time to start playing again.
LeBron and AD are going to take a month off to start the year, as they should, because they literally just
stopped playing.
They won a championship less than 80 days ago, so they probably should, and just let the new guys kind of work their way in. And that's kind of what we saw last night. It was rough. I mean, the quality of basketball last night was not fantastic, and I'm slightly ashamed I stayed up late to watch it, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
Joe, did you get you any NBA action in last night?
You know, not a ton. I will say that I was working on something. I was actually in a very intense live chat with various members of Vault Twitter. So I had to be very focused. I had to be very focused on that. I was kind of following along. I mean, I saw a little bit of the Brooklyn game, and yeah, I mean, Kyrie Durant, you bring LeVert off the bench. That's a team. That's going to be a team to watch. But yeah, spent a lot of time doing that. So the beautiful results of that will be out later today. We can talk about that later too. Of course we will.
Of course we will. Yes, we will talk about Vol Twitter a little bit later. Also, some interesting news in the Tennessee football program yesterday as well. Wes Rucker from Go Vols 24/7 joins us at 7:30. Teron Davenport, our man from ESPN NFL Nation, he joins us at 8 o'clock. And then Packers reporter from ESPN NFL Nation, Rob Domofsky, will join us at 9 o'clock. So a lot to get to today here on the show. And by the way, no Call Your Shot Friday this week. It will be Call Your Shot Wednesday. We'll be doing that today at 7:45. So get your bold predictions in the world of sports for over the weekend ready for us. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025 on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Well, Joe, there was some interesting news yesterday. Late afternoon yesterday, I'm scrolling around on Twitter, and all of a sudden I see Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet tweet out that Mikhail Granlund will return to the Predators on a one-year deal around $3.75 million. So, Joe, we've sat here and talked about how much different this team is going to look and what the holes could look like on the second line, and it looks like they're getting a very familiar face back in Mikhail Granlund. I would assume you would slot him in on the second line to start with Matt Duchene.
Yeah, it simplifies, you know, what you're going to do early. It also kind of, to me, you know, in a way, I think it makes sense. I mean, it's obviously you're paying him less. It's a one-year deal. It probably is a comment probably more on the league situation than him, although I guess you could look at it the other way. But you know, from the fan perspective, I think there was also some excitement about which young guys, you know, might end up with Duchene on that second line. And I mean, frankly, that's great, but it's still good to have someone proven who actually was playing pretty well, by the way, when John Hines took over. So I think it's a good development for the Preds. But yeah, I mean, that took me off guard too. I'm like, oh, really? No kidding. But that's kind of, you know, that's kind of where the league is right now.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, this was not obviously a great year to be a free agent. And I think in a normal year, Mekhi Granlund probably gets more money on the open market and is not in this situation. But we've seen it a lot throughout the NHL so far. A lot of one-year deals. I would assume at some point, if Mike Hoffman ever decides to sign somewhere, probably going to be a one-year deal from that as well. So I'm not going to say that this completely takes the Predators out of the Mike Hoffman sweepstakes, but I can't imagine them bringing back both Granlund and then putting Hoffman in there either. So it's interesting. You look at the roster right now, I think everybody's just assumed that Tolvanen's going to come in and compete for a spot on the top six. What this tells me is maybe that's the case still, and in a perfect world, you'd like for him to come in and push, but I don't know if they think he's ready yet at this point, and quite frankly, I couldn't blame him. I don't know if he's ready yet at this point either, so this at least gives you some more options, some more depth, and hopefully Granlund and Duchesne, if they're playing together, find a chemistry that, quite frankly, they just didn't find often enough together last year.
Yeah, well, right, and then, you know, when it comes to Tolvanen, you know, when at what point is him not being ready just sort of like he's maybe not going to be ready? I'm not saying it's now.
That's a great question.
It's probably getting somewhat closer to that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a good chance that I'm already comfortable saying he was a bit overhyped. I'm not saying he's not going to be good.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about like just, you know, like immediately overhyped. I mean, maybe long-term overhyped. And I'm not saying he's not going to be good. I think some people have viewed him as, hey, one day that guy is going to be a 35-40 goal scorer. And I don't know. I don't know if we're going to get there. He's still young. Still got a lot of work to do. Still got a lot of time left to grow. But he's got a lot to prove this year in training camp. This is a huge year, in my opinion, for Tolvanen.
Absolutely. So what about this move as it relates to Tomasino?
Yeah, it's interesting.
The young hope that people hope is really on the fast track.
I mean, I mean, you can't sit here and tell me that it helps his, you know, his prospects of making the team out of camp and playing in a significant role. Now, you know, who knows? Maybe he comes in. They're about to play in the World Junior Championships. Maybe he lights it up, has a great training camp, and just kind of forces his way into the conversation. But when you add another veteran to the group, and you've already got like this roster full of young guys anyway that are trying to make their way to the league, to me that doesn't help. So I don't know. They're in an interesting spot with him. I mean, just given his age and maybe having to go back and play junior hockey, and he's already just lit it up down there. It's an interesting spot to be in with Tomasino. But to me, if you're going to play him, probably not playing him on the fourth line. So I'm not saying you're necessarily playing him top 6 minutes all the time, but Granlund coming in, you would assume he's going to play top 6 minutes. I don't think that helps Tomasino in terms of his own pursuit of trying to make this team out of camp. Now, maybe it doesn't really hurt his development in the long run, and I don't think it really does, but I think for his sakes, it certainly doesn't help.
Yeah. Bottom line is, I mean, even if you're a fan who, you know, wanted to see as much of the young guys as possible, I mean, it's not a bad thing if your team has another good player.
Right.
And, you know, Granlund, like you said, like he and Duchesne have to find a chemistry. He has not been what they hoped when they gave up Kevin Fiala for him at all. But I did, I mean, I definitely thought he looked like a different player last year from about January on and had some real nice stretches. The best stretches, you know, he had in his short time with the Preds. So maybe he can build on that.
Joe, your boy Dan Mullen back in the news yesterday. I know that you saw this and loved it. Florida has been placed on a 1-year probation after Coach Dan Mullen has been given a 1-year show cause after the NCAA determined that the football program violated recruiting contact rules on two occasions in 2019. So the Florida Gators and our man Dan Mullen back in the news.
Yeah, and he said, he had a press conference and he said, you know, if I had a full stadium and if Ohio State would have played 10 games, none of this would have happened.
Would have never taken place.
No, he didn't really do that.
No.
Nothing major with this, but still, a 1-year show cause, so he can't recruit off campus at all for a year, which is, you know, the head coach being able to go in and close the deal on the guys is pretty important, you know. So who knows how this will affect Florida, but kind of another kind of rough little piece of news for Dan. He's had a run here.
Yes, he's definitely had a run. Gets out of the SEC title game. Decent showing against Florida. Put up 46. I mean, you got to feel good about yourself. And then this happens. Like you said, not a big deal. You know, part of it is, I think, impermissible contact with an assistant coach in high school. So it's not like this is this some, you know, groundbreaking story of recruiting violations from Florida. But got to know the SEC is getting back. You're getting back to being a top program when you get busted for cheating like this. It's great.
Yeah, I always find it interesting. This is like the classic, like, Al Capone tax evasion thing whenever an SEC school gets something like this, you know. And I mean, meanwhile, you know, there's another investigation going on. It's going to be very interesting to see what details end up coming out of this, out of, you know, the thing at UT. That's a little bit more, you know, like there's some more substance to at least the allegations of that one. But hey, you know, compliance, it's very important in the SEC. You know, just look at LSU. They took that bowl ban, and they've got a really good basketball coach.
Maybe that's the one thing we'll take away from 2020 in the SEC, Joe. These compliance departments, these programs, they're really being responsible here and policing themselves. Maybe that's what we'll walk away with here in 2020.
It's a new day. It's a new day. Absolutely. Compliance across the SEC. Actually, you know, Greg Sankey wrote like a memo. I think this was actually FOIA'd, if I'm not mistaken. I'll find it during the show. But, you know, to the NCAA, basically saying that, like, you know, there's a big compliance issue, you know, that compliance is something that really threatens, you know, college sports, which is, I mean, I think that's, it's very interesting coming from the commissioner of the SEC. I mentioned Vol Twitter last night. We're trying to figure out, you know, how to fix Tennessee football. And, you know, really strong statement that I got, hey, cheat more, cheat better, and win because you cheat. Like, you know,
get caught a lot less.
I can't argue with that. I can't argue with that.
Just cheat means better. More.
It does mean more. Yes. Oh, what a time we're living in now here in 2020. When we come back, some more coaching news in the SEC. The Auburn football team. I'm used to calling everybody a football team now. I don't know why I did that. I heard a bunch of talk before the show about the Washington football team. I guess I'm just calling everybody the football team now. But Auburn, a coaching hire yesterday. What does it mean for the rest of the SEC? What does it mean for Auburn? And what does it mean maybe for Hugh Freeze moving forward here? We'll get to that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, interesting day yesterday in the SEC. Auburn has made a coaching hire. Now, the coaching search was getting a little weird. Obviously, they made the decision about a week, week and a half ago to fire Gus Malzahn and agree to pay that buyout of more than $21 million. And the coaching search was very strange for Auburn. I heard some people comparing it to the Tennessee coaching search of 2017. I don't know if I'd go that far because that was on a completely different level. But Auburn finds their man eventually. They hire Boise State's Brian Harsin, who went 69-19 in seven seasons at Boise State and won three conference championships. Joe, what did you make of the Auburn coaching search as a whole and that hire of Brian Harsin specifically?
Well, first of all, I think they ended up with a pretty good coach. You know, he does not have – I mean, he's a Boise guy, spent most of his life in Boise. He did actually replace Gus Malzahn at Arkansas State in 2013. So –
just following that guy around.
Yeah, so he has a little bit of, you know, experience in the South, but not a lot. So that's a bit of a concern. I think ultimately – you know, it's not a bad hire. I mean, he took that program and he kept them very good. So, you know, he's done some good things. It'll be interesting when you talk about the search. I mean, at times in this search, I would not have guessed they would have ended up with a coach this good. So from that perspective, you know, it's good. But it was bizarre. And one thing that happened yesterday, we had reports, including from our Bruce Feldman, that Brent Venables was kind of emerging in the search. And he's a guy, you know, Clemson's D coordinator for a long time. And he's a guy who has been mentioned with so many jobs over the years and just has it either on his side or the other side, hasn't worked out. But the really weird thing yesterday, Robbie, was so Brandon Marcello, and maybe there may have been others too, but him for sure said, you know, Hugh Freeze is emerging as a candidate for Auburn, which as soon as I saw that, I said, oh, so Hugh Freeze is getting restless and putting it out there that he's a candidate for Auburn, huh? Which I think is exactly what happened.
Yes.
Or his age. I mean, you know, because obviously, I mean, they make the hire of their actual coach, Brian Harsin, yesterday and the same day. So it doesn't seem like Hugh Freeze was really emerging, but his name got out there again. And, you know, that's what happens a lot at this time of year is agents, coaches push, you know, themselves basically in certain situations, maybe to help with another situation. So that was interesting. And Hugh Freeze. So for Vols fans who were all worried that Auburn was going to hire Hugh Freeze, he is still sitting there. Now, another report yesterday, and I have got to, gosh, I feel bad about, I may have retweeted, so maybe I can find who
it was. Josh Moon from the Alabama Political Reporter, I think is where you're going with this.
Okay, you know where I'm going with this. And he, yeah, so here it is. So this is his tweet, quote, Auburn has been told quite clearly that the NCAA will view very unfavorably the hiring of Hugh Freeze. You know, and he also mentioned that Auburn is waiting the decision on basketball, of course. And I mean, I know it's shocking that Bruce Pearl would have some compliance issues.
Yeah.
But that's interesting. The fact that they've been told that this would be unfavorable. Now that a similar report came out about South Carolina, you know, when that opened up and the Hugh Freeze talk started. So look, I can't imagine that you would actually have, I mean, they can't sit here and say you can't hire him,
right?
You know, but that's an interesting, you know, thought that you would have, like, that maybe your basketball punishment is worse because you hired Hugh Freeze. I have no idea if that would actually happen or not, but I don't doubt at all that it's viewed unfavorably. I mean, you know, the baggage he's got is pretty significant, and you got to be real sure you want that guy if you're going to take it on.
Well, yeah, and to kind of forecast and look ahead to Tennessee on that, I mean, I've heard a lot of fans talk about the investigation right now going on with Pruitt, and maybe he ends up getting fired with cause. Well, let me tell you what's not going to happen. He's not going to end up getting fired with cause and have some NCAA trouble swirling about, and then you go and hire Hugh Freeze. That would be a heck of a look for the Tennessee Volunteers. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say that doesn't happen, Joe.
I mean, in a way, it would be like vintage SEC.
It would.
You know? You're like, how dare you? You are committing recruiting violations. You move on. You are gone from our campus. Hugh, hey, buddy.
Come on in, buddy.
Hey, how you doing? Yeah, no, come on. There's no big deal. Yeah, that would be quite a transition. Yeah, I just – you know, again, the Hugh Freeze thing, and we'll see with Pruitt. I mean, all of it. It's so weird right now. Like, it's December 23rd, and you've got an AD putting out statements of support for a coach. You got this investigation, and I don't have a feel for. I've got a feel for the allegations involved in this, and there's some serious stuff, but I don't have a feel for the timeline at all right now. So, I mean, it really is limbo right now for Jeremy Pruitt and this program. And how long does it last? I mean, it's just such a weird situation. Meanwhile, you know, you've got people getting in the transfer portal and there could be more of that to come too. I mean, it's a very strange time and there's no great answer. I mean, I know a lot of Vols fans will be upset if Pruitt is just still there and you get through the investigation unscathed and all that. But if it goes the other way, then now you're back in, you know, you're trying to hire a coach at a bad time of year to try to hire a coach. I mean, it's just a pretty depressing time, I'd say, for Tennessee football fans.
Yes. Yes, it is. And we'll certainly get to that a lot more here on the show here today. Wes Rucker from GoVols 24/7 joins us at 7:30. We'll have a lot of Vols conversation in the 7 o'clock hour as well. Joe, I want to point out something that Tom Pelissero has just tweeted about, and that is the NFL are telling teams that they can begin interviewing head coaching candidates employed by other clubs today. So today, if you're a head coaching candidate out there, you're working for a team right now, and there are some vacancies that you're interested in, you can be interviewed today. I wonder if Arthur Smith gets any phone calls today.
Uh-huh. See, that's interesting, and that's a little bit different timing, too. And, gosh, I mean, like, if I'm Vrabel, I'm like, hey, man, we got to score 50 on the Packers. So can you, like, you know, can you just put your phone on, you know, silent for the day and, you know, just chill out? Maybe, you know, of course, they have a regular schedule, too, this week. I thought maybe they would move things around for Christmas, but they're doing, you know, they had their normal Tuesday off and they're doing, you know, the normal week. So, but yeah, I think Arthur Smith will probably get some calls. I can't imagine he wouldn't. I mean, there's a lot of good candidates out there. If you go down the list, there are definitely a lot of intriguing candidates, but Arthur Smith at the least is going to get some looks, some interviews. And I know Titans fans would love to see him come back, at least for another year. That's going to be close. It really is going to be. You add up all the openings and all the candidates, and I could see him not getting one. I mean, there are enough other good candidates, and probably candidates who at least have done more over a longer period of time. But right. When you are red hot like he is, and you've done what you've done, even in a short period of time, you're going to be attractive to people. And I think he'll do well in interviews too.
Who's the number one candidate out there in your mind? My mind immediately goes to Eric Bieniemy when we talk about that. But do you have somebody else? Is there somebody we're not thinking of that's right near the top of the list in terms of potential NFL coaching candidates?
Yeah, I mean, Bieniemy definitely is. Because he's been out there for a couple years now, right. and I think, you know, again with Bieniemy, you know, you've got the, you know, didn't call plays thing. But to me, that's more of like when LaFleur came here to be OC, that was a big deal was made of that because he's being asked to call plays. I mean, to me, if you've done what he's done outside of that, you know, you're not coming to call plays as a head coach. You're coming to be a head coach, be a CEO. He's been the CEO of an incredible offense. So I would say him, yeah, you know, I think there's just a lot of, I mean, most of them are offensive guys, you know, like Brian Daboll is a good candidate. You know, like Joe Brady, what he did at LSU was so impressive. That's a young guy who's really rising. Look, a guy I think a lot of Lions fans are like Robert Saleh, the D coordinator for the Niners. There's a defensive guy who, and I think he fits the mold of kind of the, you know, the Vrabel mold of, like the leader of men, quote unquote, you know, approach. I think he's definitely, I mean, there's a lot, you know, you got a lot of coordinators. And then when you, I mean, like, do people look at Bill O'Brien? I know he should never be a GM again, ever.
Yeah,
right?
He's not going to get any of those interviews, I don't think. No GM interviews.
But, you know, do people look at, I mean, I think you could still make a case for him as a coach. Is Dabo going with Trevor to Jacksonville? I mean, there's some, you know, there's always a college coach or two also who, you know, wind up getting into these things.
You get to vote on the coaches poll in the NFL?
Yeah, as long as he can somehow throw shade at Ohio State from that job, I think he'd hey, listen, Dabo's going to be just fine at Clemson, and he's got it rolling. But I mean, if you were ever going to make the jump, you had a chance to go with that guy to the NFL. I'd get it. Even a guy like, you know, people talk about. I mean, look, is Harbaugh, you know, a possibility? Matt Campbell from Iowa State, could he be a possibility? There's actually a report yesterday that Pat Fitzgerald is going to have NFL suitors. So, you know, there's a lot of names from different areas. I mean, my gosh, is Josh McDaniels going to get another chance? I mean, I guess maybe, you know. Steve Spagnuolo, the Chiefs DC also. I mean, I feel like he is a guy who makes a lot of sense. I think both of their coordinators, you know, make a lot of sense. Yeah, I've just named a lot of names that are way more than the jobs that'll be open. So, you know, so you have a chance, Titans, of keeping Arthur Smith. But I think a lot of teams have got to be intrigued by what he's done.
When we come back, we'll continue the conversation on the Titans. There are two guys out there that may make some contract discussions very easy for the Titans coming up here in the offseason. We'll discuss that on the other side of the break. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Well, you know, David's a very instinctive guy that also works hard in meetings, takes a lot of notes, asks a lot of questions. So he doesn't have a lot of mistakes when he's out there. He's very productive. Like I said, very instinctive, has a great nose for the ball. And, you know, I just see a guy that the more, you know, he hasn't played much, but the more he's out there, the better he gets. And whatever details that he needs to clean up, he'll clean up the next day. Like I said, he takes notes, he takes coaching, he does a great job.
That was Titans inside linebackers coach Jim Haslett talking about David Long, who, as we know, Joe, he's been kind of thrust into more playing time, more of an important situation for the Titans since the injury to Jayon Brown. And that gets you kind of looking ahead and asking the question. They've had a couple guys having to step in this year and fill some holes, fill some roles that have been either left open due to injury or illness or whatever the case may be. David Long being one of those guys. Amani Hooker recently being one of those guys, with Kenny Vaccaro being out the last couple of games due to illness. Number one, and we'll start with David Long, what have you seen from David Long so far this season, especially since Jayon Brown has been out with injury? What do you kind of forecast him looking like as a player, maybe one day even potentially a full-time starter in the NFL?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is his chance to show it. And of course, he had a chance as a rookie when Jayon Brown was hurt last year, late in the year, and then in the postseason. And he did a great job. I mean, great job in the Baltimore game. Again, the interesting thing about, you know, that game and that matchup is it doesn't necessarily translate to any other game, you know, the way you're playing. Again, like Kamale Correa, for example, was just tremendous in that game. He was playing in his old home against the team that drafted him and traded him away. But the way that they played and the plan they had for that Ravens offense, which is like no other offense in this league, was really good, and those guys executed. Doesn't necessarily translate, but I think he's been good this year. I mean, you can see, I feel like in coverage, you can see how he can be an asset, you know, a good player. He can run with backs. He has good speed. He seems to know what he's doing. I feel like he's grown in it. Yeah, I mean, it makes it interesting because obviously, you know, you've got tough choices ahead. And this is what happens a lot in the league is you draft depth at certain positions. And even if you have a better player starting, you can't end up paying that next contract for that player. So the depth you drafted, you hope can develop and be comparable, sometimes even better than the player in question. I mean, you know, the Titans had a really good inside linebacker in Avery Williamson, a good player, but you know, they moved on. They were not going to pay the larger contract for him. And it's the circle of life in the NFL. And I do think it at that position, and maybe at safety, you know, that could also be a factor when it comes to decisions. Although I will say that I think in the case of Vaccaro, I mean, I think there's definitely a drop off.
Yeah.
I think when he's out there, they are better. But you know, he is, I mean, he signed a 4-year, $24 million deal expires in 2023. So, I mean, there's certainly some tough decisions. I mean, there's Malcolm Butler, I think somebody or somebodies, you know, are going to end up being cut or moved to deal with the salary cap situation next year. And of course, are they going to go out again and try to pay someone to rush the passer?
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of tough decisions that are on the horizon for the Titans and John Robinson specifically. And it's interesting, like, obviously we talked about David Long and Jayon Brown and his contract situation coming up. To me, part of the conversation is going to be like, what position is the easiest to replace, like in the draft? Like, for instance, we've talked so much this year about Corey Davis, and I think both you and I may have moved him to number one in terms of like the priorities for John Robinson to bring back. But you also have to look at it now as, you know, the receivers coming into the league, a lot of which are making impacts pretty early. Like, would it be easier and cheaper to go about replacing Corey Davis in the draft? I'm not sure that's the approach I would take, but these are the type of decisions that John Robinson is going to have to work through. And one thing's for sure, like, you can't have a repeat performance of this season regardless of which route you take. Like, the draft is going to have to work out better. You're going to have to get more players on the field immediately, no matter which route you go next year, if you're John Robinson.
Well, no doubt about it. And, you know, A.J. Brown, even after the game, after the Lions game, made his little campaign for, he's asked about Corey, just about Corey's play, and another great game for Corey. He's like, I hope he's next to me next year. You know, yeah. So he's already starting the campaign, and that's the thing. I think you're right. I think you have – I mean, look, I think this is – I don't think this is a short-term thing either. Lots of talent ready to come in and play at receiver in the NFL. I think we've talked about how college offenses and NFL offenses are – that they align more now. And I think it's easier for quarterbacks and receivers to come in and make an early impact. And there's a lot of talent. And so you could go in the draft and replace him. Now, the thing with Corey Davis is obviously the chemistry with Tannehill has become really good. He fits perfectly. He is a great blocker. And look, I mean, in this offense, that does matter. He's a great guy in the locker room through all the ups and downs. I mean, he's a number five pick. And you know, obviously that comes with so much scrutiny through all the ups and downs, the injuries, all these things. He has been a guy that everyone on this team rallies around. And so that's someone you want to keep. There are intangible reasons to keep him around too. But, yeah, you have to look at it from that perspective too. What positions can really supply you in the draft? And that is definitely one of them.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, I think if I'm John Robinson, one of the ways I'm also looking at this situation right now is – all right, I have a side of the ball that is just absolutely elite. I mean, we've talked about it all week. It's the top offense right now from a statistical point of view in some categories in the NFL. I mean, and regardless of really which way you want to look at it, top two or three in the NFL, we get it. Like, the defense, they've got a lot of warts. There's a lot of problems on that defense. But part of the decision-making, if I'm John Robinson, is I want to keep this offense as it is right now at this level as long as I can possibly keep it. Now, maybe you can go about doing that, and you have a similar style offense next year, and Corey Davis isn't a part of it. But if I'm John Robinson, while I've already got one side of the ball that's elite, I want to keep that side elite and just try to work on the other side to get to average or good enough. I'm not risking sacrificing losing what I have right now on offense. That's got to be a part of this discussion too if you're John Robinson.
Yeah, no, I agree. And – you know, you think about how the offensive line is playing, but, you know, well, and that's another thing, too, with the offensive line is, of course, Isaiah Wilson is, you know, is he going to be a part of the future or not? That's very much in jeopardy right now. But, you know, even as of now, you know, you have Dennis Kelly and you have him signed through 2022. You have Lawan through 2023. You've got Saffold through 2022. So that's an important part of it. You know, I think keeping that group, Nate Davis is really coming on, as we know. You know, Ben Jones has one more year left on his deal. So he's coming up soon. And that's probably a place where you're looking to change. I think Humphreys is a place where, you know, I think if the Titans certainly could have this trade-off and they knew they could sign Davis, I think, you know, they would probably sacrifice Humphreys. And that's where you can go still get a receiver in this draft.
Right.
And have a nice third guy to develop with those two. But I agree. I mean, you know Henry and Tannehill, but you want to support them as much as possible. And I do think that the guy I had number one before Corey Davis had this tear was Jonnu Smith. I mm-hmm. still think that, you know, I think and it's interesting because, you know, Jonnu Smith's year, he's no fault of his own. Has gone a different way. I think it was heading toward the kind of production that makes him more appealing on the market. Now, look, teams do their homework. Jonnu Smith is a guy who on film, you know, he jumps out at you. His talent is not going to be some secret in this league, but maybe the way this year has gone helps the Titans bring him back.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's certainly possible. And, you know, you look at this offense right now, you look at the decisions John Robinson is going to have to make. I agree. Like right now, the way I see it, unless they get really creative, I just think Jayon Brown might be a casualty. And that sucks because, you know, he's a good player, especially obviously when he's healthy, he can do a lot of good things. but you're just going to run out of money at some point. Like, I don't know if Jayon Brown is going to be a part of this team moving forward.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, you're talking about a guy who, where he was drafted, I mean, his deal is, you know, his deal is 4 year, $2.7 million.
Right.
You know, I mean, you are getting him for very cheap, and he's a guy who deserves to get paid. And I think it's I mean, I think he's really close because he makes plays, man. He is a playmaker for this defense. He's an emotional guy. He's the guy with the green dot making calls. I mean, he's a really important guy. They are functioning without him. I think Long is doing a nice job, and sometimes that hurts, you know, a guy's chances of coming back. But I think the Titans would love to bring him back. Again, the question with that is, like, what is the plan? Because you have to have a plan. You cannot carry on without people on the edge who can get after a quarterback. Are you going to go after a Bud Dupree, you know, or someone else? Certainly, I think the Titans will draft someone, but are you comfortable just going draft and thinking, you know, I mean, you really have to hit and hit on someone who can do it early, because this is a window. I mean, no matter what happens this year, you are also going for it next year. So, yeah, he is right on that line. If you add up all the numbers, can you make it work? And I don't know if you can if you're going to go to try sign someone on the edge.
We've talked a lot this week about the Colts and the Steelers, the other big game in the AFC South coming up on Sunday. The Titans will know what the result of that game is before they get kicked off on Sunday night in Green Bay. Will the result of that game affect the way the Titans play? We'll discuss that on the other side of the break. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody's doing well, getting ready for the holiday season. It's going to be a good time, hopefully. Not as cold this week. I feel better, Elijah.
Wasn't as cold this morning.
I know.
Which was nice. Leaving the house, I didn't totally freeze my rear off.
We're very selfish here on the show. We look out for ourselves and our sleeping habits, our warmth, all those things.
Neither of which have been satisfied very well.
Neither of which are going on that well. Joe, we've talked about the Colts and the Steelers, the matchup all week long, and that vaunted Pittsburgh Steelers offense going up against the Colts on Sunday, and that game kicks off at 12 o'clock. So the Titans, by the time they get around to Sunday Night Football in Green Bay on Sunday night, they will know the result of that game. They will know what that means maybe potentially for their future in the AFC South. And if the Colts win that game, the Titans know if they want to win this division, they're probably in a must-win situation, you know, notwithstanding maybe a possible sweep of the Colts by the Jacksonville Jaguars in the next week. How do you think that affects their mindset if the Colts have already won this game heading into it? Do you think it affects it at all with Mike Vrabel and Ryan Tannehill and everything this team's been through in the last year?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I mean, obviously, this team, this group of guys, they've been in plenty of pressure situations. I mean, last year, they had to, and really anyone who has been here since 2018, well, gosh, go back to 2017. And obviously it's a shorter and shorter list of guys, but the core group of this team is very much used to being in must-win games in December. They didn't win the one in 2018. They also didn't have their quarterback. They had Blaine Gabbert at quarterback. They still gave it they actually gave it a heck of a run against Andrew Luck and the Colts that night without them. But obviously they won the win and get in game against Jacksonville in 17. And of course last year they had to go on a tear at the end, and they did, and they got in. So like, I don't think that the Colts winning all of a sudden they're going to curl up in a ball and say, I also don't know that, like, does this give them more intensity to know they have to win? I mean, it's interesting because you kind of compartmentalize things. I mean, coaches obviously think bulletin board material matters, right? They use it all the time. It has to matter some. I mean, it has to give somebody an edge somewhere because they use it and they fear it being used. But at the same time, like, aren't these stakes enough? Like, if teams are in the playoffs, that's what I always found interesting. Like, teams are playing each other in the playoffs. Does it matter, like, if there's a revenge factor or someone talked trash? Like, did Derrick Henry run better last year because the Colts or the Ravens said stupid crap before that game, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he talked trash afterward because of it, but it's always really interesting to me, like, how these things actually factor into performance. But look, the Titans are going to know. We know that. They are going to know if, one, they can win the division by winning this game, like, go win the division, or two, they probably won't win the division if they lose the game.
Right.
You know, so I don't know how that affects them. It is.
It really is. Like, it's a heck of a swing. Like, if Indy loses that game, you've got a chance to wrap things up from a divisional standpoint on Sunday night in Green Bay with the whole nation watching. If they don't, and Indy kind of rolls, like, it's starting to look more and more like they could, given what Pittsburgh's looked like the past 3 weeks, then you're in a heck of a situation if you're the Titans. You've got to win that game. I mean, obviously, I get it. The Jags beat the Colts in week one, which I think the Colts are probably looking back on right now, like, how in the world did we let that happen? But you can't rely on that happening again. Like, now that, especially now that Jacksonville is, like, firmly in the driver's seat for Trevor Lawrence, you're not going to see a whole lot from the Jags in that game. So if you're the Titans, like, if Indy beats Pittsburgh, you've got to win out. Like, that's the way you've got to approach it. That's one heck of a swing, and it's interesting, like, how close it is right now between the Titans and the Colts, and what a different mindset or what a different approach it could look like for the Titans on Sunday night, if just depending on that one game.
All right, now I'm going to argue with you on what you just said on the Jags. I mean, I think that, I mean, if that were true, then the Jets wouldn't have just won last week, right? I mean, we talked to Charles Robinson yesterday. I mean, their front office is, like, rooting harder than you could ever root against a team. I mean, it's just like Major League. And, you know, I mean, like, the Jaguars players, like Doug Marrone, you know, has he been fired yet? Has he been told he's fired? He's going to be fired, right? I mean,
right.
He's out. Right. Though, like, they don't care about Trevor Lawrence, you know? These guys are trying to stay in the league. They're trying to get better contract, whatever it is. Like, they are going to fight against the Colts. And I don't think they'll win because they're not good. But, like, I never in the NFL buy the team wants this team to tank, so the players in the field are going to do what they want.
Well, I don't buy that either, but I just don't expect a lot from the Jaguars. I mean, you've lost 13 games in a row.
Right.
I mean, they're looking –
you've been competitive.
Yeah.
In a lot of them. But, yeah, I mean, look, they're not going to beat the Colts. I'm just saying – they're not going to go out and say, we got Trevor Lawrence, yay! Like Doug Marrone, why the heck does he give a crap? You know, he's going to be replaced by Dabo.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, it's here's the thing. If you're the Titans, whatever the situation is, you know, this should be what you want if you're Vrabel and if you're this team is, hey, whatever it is, the point is we think we can go beat anybody anywhere and that we are a legit contender to win this sucker, to win the division, go in the playoffs, beat anybody in our way. So if we believe that, let's prove it tonight. You know, I mean, that's what you want the mindset to be, regardless of what happens earlier in the day. Go show that you're actually a team that can be at the highest level in this league. I mean, this is an opportunity. Everybody's watching. Go show it. I mean, that's what you want the mindset to be. But yeah, I mean, there's no way they're not going to know the result, and it probably affects different people on the team differently.
Yeah, and you bring up an interesting point, like with this game being on Sunday Night Football this late into the season and with the stakes being what they are, like, you know, obviously, like, Vrabel will never admit to this, and if you asked a player, they wouldn't admit to it either. But it's got to give you some more juice coming into Lambeau on Sunday Night Football in Week 16 with everything on the line that's there. I mean, for this team, for this offense especially, the matchup, I think the way it's viewed league-wide, it's a huge game. That's got to give you, if you're a Titans player, some extra juice heading into this game.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt about it. I mean, you're talking about, what, the most fabled field in the NFL, right?
Yeah.
I mean, is there a more fabled field? I don't think there's anything probably close to this. I mean, obviously, you got Soldier Field, but they screwed that place up with the stupid spaceship they put around the stadium.
Yes, they did.
You know, I mean, this is the place, this is the tundra, and it's in a time of year when it can be a tundra, and it's it's the best team in the NFC, and it's maybe the MVP right now. I feel like there's increasing momentum that Aaron Rodgers, you know, is the leader over Mahomes in that. So there's so many different angles on this. And yeah, I mean, look, the Titans, we know that, look, they care. Anybody in this league cares about getting respect, you know, around the league, getting attention. Obviously that can be counterproductive if you care too much about that stuff, but we know some of these guys have talked about it before. And now they are getting talked about. They get talked about a lot of times because of Derrick Henry. I mean, he is a guy who now brings them to this. Wow. People want to watch this team because of Derrick Henry, but they also made the AFC Championship game. They're getting more, you know, more attention around the league. And this is a chance to, I think it's more important to show to themselves, yeah, we can beat anyone anywhere and let's make a playoff run. Also, you were definitely clinching the playoffs no matter what happens with the Colts if you win. So, like, you don't have to have some high-pressure game at Houston if you win this game, regardless of that result. But, yeah, I also think it is that opportunity, the extra juice from Sunday Night Football in Lambeau.
Yeah, and look, you look at this matchup for the Titans against the Packers, and look, I mean, first off, you're going to have the actual Sunday Night Football crew, Al Michaels, Chris Collinsworth. Unfortunately, we don't get the slide from Collinsworth anymore, but this is as big as it gets, and that's why I've said all week, like, this is the biggest regular season game I can remember for in a long time from the Titans, from a pure just national interest standpoint. And obviously, look, the most important thing is winning the game anyway, but if you're a Titans fan, you've been clamoring for respect for a long time, and even though they made the run to the AFC title game last year, if you think back to predictions before the season, and a lot of people love the Colts, there's an opportunity here for you to really grab respect and continue to run with it. And I know Titans fans, they care about that. Titans players, like you just said, Joe, they care about that. So I'm expecting a great effort from this team. We know what we're going to see, I think, offensively from both teams. I think this is going to be one heck of a game. I've heard some Titans fans scared that maybe Rodgers can come in and just blow you out. Maybe he does. I don't know. But I think this is going to be a playoff-style game from both teams.
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, because – you know, obviously, the Packers, I mean, the one seed, I mean, that's such a valuable thing for them this time of year. I mean, it means more for some teams than others. It's not the fan aspect, but just teams that have to go there and play them this time of year. You know, you have to think that is such an important thing for them to hold on to. So, you know, their incentive is high. And look, and Aaron Rodgers says he is playing for the MVP. He's made it clear he's playing for the MVP. And then I think this is a big Tannehill game. And we've talked about him this week. You know, it's just another week, another reminder week that people don't think as much of him as they should. Here's a chance for him to go out and kind of stick it to those people. And, you know, that may not be close to the top of why he's motivated for this game, but I know Titans fans would love to see him have a huge game and show what they see all the time, which is that he's one of the top handful of guys playing the position right now in the league.
Go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Tyler from Berry Hill texts in and says, how much does it worry you that this year the team hasn't performed in several games that I would consider high pressure, like the Steelers and the Browns and Thursday night against the Colts? I just still worry about this team winning the big one against a big-time team. Hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, that's a fair thing to bring up. You know, I think you also – I would put high pressure on the Bills and – you know, high attention on the Bills and pressure. Although, like you said yesterday, Robbie, everybody thought they'd get beat, but high pressure on the games at Baltimore and Indy.
Yeah.
You know, I would say. So I think it's been a mix. They certainly have not, I think especially the Steelers and the Colts games, you know, the Steelers game, they started very poorly. And that was the big, they were still undefeated. There was an example to me of like, they're kind of shrinking in the moment. I mean, I think the Colts game, they came right out and played. And, you know, some things blew up in their face. More than anything, their punter. You know, their punter and their special teams in general. So, I think those are two different situations. But, yeah, that's fair to bring up. They've kind of been, you know, up and down on that stuff. So, here's a chance to sort of maybe break the tie.
Coming up next, another quarterback out the door at the University of Tennessee. Does Jeremy Pruitt have any idea how to handle a quarterback room? We'll discuss it on the other side of the break. This is Robbie and Rexroad live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.